from CITR has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke you every day. Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
Let's see here. God. Oh. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Oh. Everybody. God, this is awful. Isn't there anything? Anything? Anything?
Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Discorder magazine, or check us out online at citr.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance?
To understand more about fashion, we asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. It's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism as opposed to someone who buys,
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
You're listening to CITR 101.9. Broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Hello, Vancouver. This is Carolyn Mark. You're listening to CITR 101.9 on your FM dial.
Right. Who'd win in a wrestling match, Lemmy or God?
Lemmy.
God. Wrong, dickhead. Trick question. Lemmy is God.
Powercore, heavy metal radio, decimating eardrums in the lower mainland since 1985. Tune in every Saturday from 1 to 3. Don't let your mother know.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
It's the time of the season when love runs high. In this time, give it to me easy and let me try with pleasured hands to take you in the sun to promised lands.
What's your name? Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy?
He rich. Is he rich like me? Has he taken
any time to show?
To show you what you need to live.
Tell it to me slowly.
Tell you why
I really want to know.
What's your name?
What's your name?
Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy?
He rich. Is he rich like me? Has he taken?
Has he taken
any time?
Any time to show?
To show you what you need to live.
Tell it to me slowly.
Tell you.
Time goes on. Hello, hello, hello. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This is Word on the Street. Our host, Isaac, is still absent, but we got a full room here, so it won't be a problem. We got plenty to talk about. This week, we are discussing covers, what makes a cover a great cover. We're going to talk about some famous covers, and also a little bit about the ethics of covering a song, and a little about the copyrights and how the law kind of ties in with doing a cover. So I'm going to dive right in, and we're just going to talk about a little bit of copyright stuff just to get the basis before we talk about the good covers out there, some famous ones. So basically, there's a couple different types of copyright elements. There's the composition, which is like the actual musical notes and the lyrics, and then there's also the sound recording, which is the like actual physical recording, whether it be like a CD, a cassette, or a digital format. And both of these things you need a separate license for. And most people will get something called mechanical license, which is based out of the U.S. and Canada also runs off it as well, which is basically like you buy a license indirectly through a company, so you don't have to always be contacting the original artists or their record label. So once since we got that down, we're going to talk about a couple of famous covers, and we're going to start going around the room. If anyone wants to bring up some of their favorite ones or ones that they think are pretty prominent, you can go ahead and do that.
I just want to talk about Bob Dylan covers. I think he's a really good artist to cover because his lyrics are always like very high quality, very intellectual. But sometimes the music itself isn't that interesting and like just like melodic. So when artists kind of add that like melodic element to the song, can really bring it to like the next level. So I think we have All Along the Watchtower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the Jimmy version. Mm-hmm.
Definitely, and that's a big part about covers. What makes a cover good is taking something that is lyrically or technically a beautiful song, you know, like the work that's gone into it, and putting such an artistic spin on it. And we see that with maybe Nirvana's cover of The Man Who... What is it? The Man Who...
Sold the world.
Yeah, I was going to say Change, but Sold, which is a David Bowie song originally. But the vocals are just... The change of vocals really makes a big difference. And I think most people don't realize that's a cover, actually. Just because it's so unique because of the change of vocals, even though it's the same song, technically.
I think one of the best things about finding out something was a cover, or like one of the best realizations is finding out that a song is a cover and you didn't even realize, or like two different songs that you would total that are the same by different people. You know, like The Boxer is originally a Simon and Garfunkel song, but I didn't even realize that Mumford & Sons had done it. And I, like, knew about both of the songs existing, but I didn't realize they were covers because, like, the differences are just, like, stylistically it's a bit different, and I think that's so neat to realize that.
And since we're discussing some covering stuff, it just popped in my head. Remember the whole thing with Vanilla Ice and Queen and that whole thing with the bass line and how the bass line was technically,
Like
he said, different? Exactly, Under Pressure and Ice Ice Baby, which is interesting if you look at it from the legal side because he didn't actually purchase... a mechanical license or any license, I don't think, before he produced that one. So did he not get in trouble?
I think there was like a one note difference or something.
It's the baseline note that he I was watching a video earlier today, and it's the one that goes down lower, dun 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 dun, you know, and him describing that, there's a video of it, it's absolutely hilarious because he sings both bass lines and it's like so similar, it totally just ruins his argument completely in the interview. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I heard that it's like pretty hard to sue people for like musical theft, I guess. Mm. Like, I remember, I don't know if it was Marvin Gaye or someone. Mm-hmm. Marvin Gaye alive? He's alive. Is he alive?
No,
he's not
good.
Alive. Because yeah. Someone sued, like, Robin Thicke and, Robin Thicke and Pharrell for, what was that creepy? Blurred Lines.
Blurred Lines.
They were, like, in a lot of trouble for that. I don't know if he won or not, but I've heard it's, like, a difficult process.
I think the Marvin Gaye estate, like, really likes to sue people.
Oh,
they also tried to sue Ed Sheeran for...
Shape of You? No.
Yeah, I think for that, or maybe not. But for one of his songs. The only similarity was the chord progression, so they didn't actually win. But yeah, they like to sue people.
True. Yeah, the only real time when you're going to be looking to actually make some money is when they've someone's used the actual original recording, like the sound recording. Yeah. So like you literally just take it off a CD or rip it straight off a digital file and loop it in the background. And that's when we kind of get into the area of more sampling instead of covering. Which is, we find ourselves in a very dominant, sample-dominant area here with hip-hop. And a lot of artists that actually revolve around sampling nowadays. So it's made it a lot more complicated. And what really happens is the copyright laws have trouble keeping up, honestly, with the innovation with sampling. And I don't think it's entirely a bad thing because, you know, it's more for the public, right? Like, it's for the enjoyment of people. Right. And yes, it's to make money as well. But we all love these songs, these Kanye songs, these songs with brilliant samples in them. They are amazing. And we much prefer to listen to them than just see them, I don't know, be held back because they can't go through for legal reasons. Right. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. True. It's interesting, though, because there's like a whole like YouTube genre dedicated to like covering, like, you know, this like. I can't remember any of those names, but they like literally play the song, except they play with like an acoustic guitar. But besides mm-hmm. that, it's exactly the same. They get millions of views, and I feel like they don't have to get permission, because I feel like covers in that context are fine. Like within the YouTube copyright laws, I think covering for just like covering a song or like for parody, you don't have to actually get the copyright, but people still get flagged, which is like another awful thing. Like I know Taylor Swift has been kind of notorious for taking stuff down, even if she doesn't technically have the right to, like YouTube can do mm-hmm. that. So I feel like it's a very intricate system, and it's kind of hard to find like a black and white intricate way to understand it.
So then that being said, is there like a set criteria for that a song would have for it to be able to like someone to be able to take legal action against it or against that artist for copyright issues?
Like we were saying, it's a blurred line. Yeah, no, that was awful. Sorry. Oh my goodness.
Good pun.
Yeah, it's a Friday. Okay. But yeah, no, it's really tough actually. And then it's the whole thing is very interesting. It's really dry. I'm not going to go through this whole article on it because it's a bunch of disgusting legal talk. But you know, it's basically like it's a hard fight. It's a hard battle, but there's a lot of money in it. So people go after it anyways. And that, I mean, it is definitely best exemplified by the Queen v. Vanilla Ice. That was the it was the most obvious rip. But he almost got away with it. He did, but he didn't. He still had to pay some royalties in the end, if I'm not mistaken.
I think if you're looking at art or music as art, is there a point where you're basically ripping off the artist and devaluing art if you're constantly refreshing it or taking samples or, you know, doing covers and taking samples of it? Because I think that's a question that we need to ask ourselves and something that can be widely debated.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where we draw the line between like a tribute or like a rip. Like, are they doing it as a tribute to the original, you know, or are they doing it to make profit and for their own selfish reasons? And then we see things like tribute bands, which are so innocent, right? Like these guys obviously love the originals, and they're doing it out of love for the song, and they're doing it out of to keep that song going, to extend the longevity of that track or that artist, and bring it kind of into the modern era, and that some of the younger people hear it. I think that's what I love about tribute bands, and they also have funny names.
I think the struggle is, too, though, if you're, let's say you're copying a Picasso kind of and saying it's a tribute to the artist, but then you're selling it for the same price or more than Picasso got for his painting. Where does that leave kind of the creativity and, you know, the expression through that and like development of your own talent and art? I get if you're doing it for the passion of the artist, but then if you're profiting off of it, then that adds some greater kind of implications.
I feel like it's a more complicated issue. Like, I feel like there's a difference between ripping someone off and then just taking influence from them, like being inspired by an artist, sampling or like having a similar sounding song.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why intellectual property, the idea of it, is just so complicated, right? And we've kind of made some guidelines generally to help us kind of wrap our minds around the idea of intellectual property, like public domain, which is actually a legal thing all over the world. It changes between countries. Just generally for music, the copyright protection, unless renewed by, say, an agency that still represents that artist, lasts up to 50 to 70 years after the death of the last surviving author or artist, or 95 years from the publication date, so almost 100 years. So that would be things like, you know, classical music, black and white films, all those kind of things. They're like they're put under the categorization as public domain, and basically that means they're open for creative like expressions and inspired expressions of like art based on that stuff once it's in public domain, which is a great thing, really.
Yeah, I feel like going to a more grassroots level, like not necessarily people copying a band's sound or like their style for profit, but just like when you first start learning an instrument and like learning to write songs, you just tend to write songs like your favorite artist because that's who inspires you. And there's like a lot of bands that when they first start, they may just sound like a discount version of a more famous band, but as they grow and like progress, their sound and their own like sound will progress into something new. And like I feel, has anyone seen Sing Street, that movie? It's like, it's okay, some nods. It's like this Irish, it's about this Irish dude, and he's like in high school and he starts a band, and it's set in the 80s, and every song they make is like an obvious reflection of like a band they're super into. So it starts off with like Duran Duran, and then it like goes to the Clash, and like it's super interesting, but eventually at the end of the movie they have their like own sound. So I feel like it's not always from a malicious place, it's just like you love these bands and you're going to sound like them because you like them.
Yeah, totally. And that's like stemmed the creations of a lot of different genres too. Yeah. If you look at Nirvana and that era, starting the creation of kind of the alt-rock genre, and that's because people are really taking time to use their inspirations to make their own style of music, and then it branches off to a completely new genre. So there's definitely lots of perks.
Yeah, cross-genre covers are a beautiful thing. I think we got a couple listed down here that cross over a couple of genres. There was CeeLo Green covering someone, help me out here. It was sorry, I have it on the list here, but I'll skip over that one because I don't have it in my mind right now. But we can talk about the Zootons for a little bit, which is a very interesting one with the song Valerie, which completely switched over genres. The Zootons were an English indie rock band from Liverpool. And they released their album in May 2004, and that had Valerie on it. And then that one was taken, and it was a cover by Amy Winehouse, which was completely different from the rock original, but a beautiful thing nonetheless, as we all know.
Yeah, and speaking of Amy Winehouse, another song that she covered that's also been covered a ton of times is Girl from Ipanema. It's one of those songs where you never quite know who originally did it just because there's been so many covers. I'm not actually sure now, but a really common one was by Frank Sinatra, and that's how I got to know that one.
There's also really awful cross-genre covers that exist out there. I'm very sorry. I'm the negative voice of, like, the show always, but if anyone's ever heard of Punk Goes Pop, like, it's like I feel like I've talked about this before on the show, mm-hmm. but there's, like, several volumes, and it's just, like, modern pop-punk bands and, like, metalcore bands and stuff covering pop songs and, like, I don't know. I feel like it's a really hard thing to pull off. So when people do it well, it's like it is a beautiful thing. Like Sturgill Simpson covered In Bloom by Nirvana, and it doesn't make any sense, but like it's pretty cool because like this country dude is covering this grunge band. But are there any covers that you guys like love that sound nothing like the original?
I love American Wedding from Frank Ocean's mixtape, mm-hmm. and I know he got like a lot of he got in trouble from that from the guy. In the Eagles, but then he wasn't profiting off it, so true. They kind of couldn't do anything. And also, Nature Feels, mm-hmm. like a cover of Electric Feel by MGMT. Oh, but I cool. love the originals of both of those songs as well, but it's literally the same song, just different lyrics, but good covers, in my opinion.
Yeah, another really good one that I got to know, it's like a cover of No Diggity by Chet Faker. It's really cool because he took a song that's like a typical like R&B song and then he just like has like changed it to like his style. That's a great way to like be inspired by somebody and then totally take it on and like make your own style of it. Another one that I knew of, it was a cover of No Scrubs by TLC. It was by Bastille and I can't
It's on like one? BBC Radio 1, right?
Yeah.
And We Can't Stop by Miley Cyrus. They covered that too,
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I think that's an example, again, of just like taking like the lyrics, like being inspired and then building some quality thing off of it that like relates to your own thing. They had like clips of like Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho in that. Like they totally did their own thing with it. I think that made it a great cover.
I think in a way also taking a cover and then like crossing it to a different genre almost takes more creative work in some aspects, I think, than just making your own song, because you have to take something and almost totally transform it while keeping it lyrically similar.
Yeah, covering and sampling is definitely its own art form. And like I said before, we're seeing just like this amazing ability of covering and sampling that's coming out. And you just like, it's just, you can really respect the work that some artists put into these covers and chopping up these samples. It's almost like an instrument sampling nowadays, especially with the technology, with things like Akai's pads on their hardware, where you can assign a sound from another track or whatever you need, like a vocal chop onto a pad, and you play it almost like an instrument. You can pitch shift it up and down, and you can be super creative with it. And it's basically just like making an entirely new song with the vocal chop as a note, from your instrument.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to watch people go backwards as well. It's really interesting to watch people go backwards as well. Dilly Dally, a Toronto kind of grungy band, took a Drake song, Know Yourself, and just brought it back to kind of a really grungy, very deconstructed version of itself. And it's cool to see it go both ways.
Yeah. Do you have something to say? Go ahead.
I would like to, while we're talking about samples, bring up the album Since I Left You by The Avalanches, which is, I think it's 1 hour and 4 minutes, and it is entirely samples. In fact, you know, some people have brought up the number 16,000 samples, and that is an album that definitely has its own feeling to it. It, you know, you can tell it's The Avalanches writing it, and it has this feeling that's consistent throughout it, while using sounds from songs from the 40s to songs from, you know, the late 90s, and it all kind of brings it together in an interesting way.
Does that album have Because I'm Me on it? Is that the one?
I love that song.
That song is so cool.
It does indeed,
and the
yeah.
sample for that is like the most obscure, like random song from the 40s that you would just never expect to be in like a rap song, but it works perfectly.
Maybe we'll play it later. Who knows? And talking about playing music, I'm going to play a couple songs and some ads, and we'll be back soon.
Where you at though? Why don't you come and see us in our natural? Yeah, we getting jiggy with the hands. Rap about beef back when 50 was the man. Rap about East and West and who's the best MC to be tested on my fun flex. I'm just trying to get up on some complex shit, but now I'll spend coupons on Poupon to flex it. Dijon is nuanced by vocal inflection. Shit sounds way too bad and bougie, what? Yes. My town staying hella groovy, what? Yes. My town always living loosely. Glide, swoop, drop, living loosely. Y'all trying to fly like you folded. Straight edge only gets you one place. If you staying complacent with only living in the moment, I'll be swimming in. Everybody screaming, oh, cause they thinking that they won. They stuck it binary while we in the quantum. My niggas about to die like I'm fucking LMR. Fast boy on that skirt, Russian oligarch. We zipped the class so spastic, so fast that we look like stretching plastic. Or Mr. Fantastic, elastic flow next to classic rhyme scheme. An overrated term to put between some words that boast about your versatility. I ain't doing that. Astronauts of the 21st century, they asking cops if they got any extra weed. Damn, the rules really seem stretchy. Gomu gomu, no riding around with the homies. Homies? So hit the naughty bang and you know that we hit the note. I don't know about the lyrics though. I know I would never give back. I know, but this shit you say is powerful.
Trying to cop a couple grams, I'm like, what the hell, do you know who I am? I don't sell weed, I don't sell drugs, I know you only thought it cause I dress like a thug, right? People walking up, trying to cop a couple grams, I'm like, what the fuck, do you know who I am? I don't sell weed, nigga, I don't sell drugs, I know you only thought it cause I rap, right? Yeah.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day. Pick up a copy around Vancouver or f*** with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theatre, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theatre, visit their website at www.riotheatre.ca.
Watching for
Hello, and we're back. You're listening to Word on the Street. This is CITR 101.9, broadcasting from the unceded territory of the Musqueam people. Right now, we want to talk about collabs that have happened posthumously, and no, not between two dead people, but one person who's deceased and another artist who felt like they had the right to collab with them, even if they could not necessarily consent. So does anyone have opinions on that?
Yeah, I don't know if it's, like, super respectful towards the person who's passed away's like creative integrity, because sometimes it's like this person, like, obviously you have a fan who has probably like the best intentions, fan being the other artist who wants to like take some piece of art that they admire and work off of it. But it's like in a sense it's kind of like what goes on when you take like a sample from somebody who's passed away. It's like the same idea, except this might be a little bit different. It's just you can't know, and the same goes for just stuff that's released like posthumously generally. You can't know if a person would ever consent to that happening, if they were ever like happy with the product, or if that would have been the grade that they would have wanted before it was released. So you just, I don't know if it's always the best idea to do that.
Interesting.
Yeah, and on the topic of things after death, I was thinking about a couple things that were released not as a collaboration, but just songs or albums released after the death of the artist that actually made that or that album or track. And I'm just going to bring up a couple of big ones, Life After Death, Born Again, and Duets by Notorious B.I.G. Were all released after his murder. Pink Floyd's 2014 album, The Endless River, that came out 6 years after Richard Wright's death, who was the keyboardist, which is that album almost like consisted almost entirely of leftover instrumentals, just a fun fact from The Division Bell, which is a great album as well. Obviously, we have Falling Down, which was the collab we were talking about, which is interesting and definitely stirred up some stuff recently about the artist and like the artist and the, kind of what they would have wanted, which is definitely an interesting topic because these guys, you know, they put so much work and passion into this stuff. And when they're passed away, you know, how do we decide who really can say what happens to their music? You know, it's just like the intellectual property thing. When does it kind of fade away? When is it no longer yours? Who are we giving this decision to afterwards?
Yeah, there's like some clear examples. Like I know Aaliyah, when she passed away, like she had passed away on the plane back from making her music video, I believe. So like the product had been made and obviously she was gonna release it. Well, not obviously, but like I feel like it was a big assumption that she was gonna release it anyway. So I feel like when that was put out, there wasn't like a big controversy, but it's more with like artists like Michael Jackson, who I think had made it pretty clear that they had like strong opinions on their music being like released without their knowledge. And like I know Will.i.am mentioned having like a lot of Michael Jackson stuff, but he refused to release it because he just felt like that was disrespectful. And now there's like Michael Jackson stuff coming out, and there was that posthumous Michael Jackson that album that came out a couple years ago that was like super interesting. So I don't know who has the authority over that. Is it like the estate or something?
I think it was Sean that just mentioned as well that like he's featured in one of Drake's new songs on Scorpion, like Don't Matter to Me. Mm-hmm. And his voice is pretty auto-tuned in that as well. You can almost like, I didn't even realize it was Michael Jackson. And I feel like that's almost, I don't know if I want to say disrespectful, but that's kind of what I thought of at the beginning, because you're taking something that someone who's like wasn't keen on having their stuff released, who's not here anymore, and then you take it and almost distort it. And I feel like that's just kind of like, it definitely is a power move, but I don't know how respectful it is, you know?
Yeah, just like sampling and covering, it's going to change, right? You can't just take, which, you know what, I think it's really respectful to take like the original version of someone who's passed away and put it in as like an interlude. Like those things are nice, like, because you're not editing it, you're not taking that liberty to mess around with it. Not to say that maybe there have been some agreements between people before death that they can use their music, which is another thing. That a lot of artists actually make music and keep it, not specifically for that reason, but they hold it for a long time. And lots of artists have banks of tons and tons of music that's just unreleased.
Yeah, recently, Damon Albarn, the creative force behind Gorillaz, after the release of their newest album, he said that he thinks that he has probably 80 albums worth of completed songs, but that he would never release any of them because they're all garbage. And I think that shows, you know, I mean, any real artist has a lot of songs that they'll make, a lot of songs they'll work on, maybe songs they'll love, but that they still wouldn't release, whether it's because they don't fit in the context of an album or it's not the musical direction they want to go in. So to just release stuff that they've made because, you know, they made it and you assume that they would want it released after they're dead feels definitely disrespectful.
The fact that these artists have so much unreleased music, that almost gives me anxiety, because, like, an artist cannot, like, totally just not want their stuff to be released, but it could be, like, a total hit to the public. But just because it's not the way they want to go, that's not the way they want to be perceived, they could just keep it hidden forever.
I think inherently people want to kind of remember those who they love, and a lot of people have almost a personal relationship with the music and the artists who make the music. So it's very difficult, I think, for people to just leave it be, whether it be because they want to make money off of it or do they just want that person's work to be seen. But I agree with kind of the sentiment that it's a bit much. You can't really make the decisions for them after they've died.
Yeah, kind of going off of what you guys were just saying, and you especially, Brenna, like with like the negative side, it's like, unfortunately, it's like after somebody dies, it's like you do kind of want to capitalize off the fact that like everybody is paying attention to that person's name at that one moment. And if you have stuff in a posthumous like bank, it just makes it like all the more worse. If you have like an artist who's like antagonized over it, like, no, this isn't good enough, I don't want to release it. And then you have like family members or like people just like managing their estate, just like put it out.
Well, I think it might be, it is a little bit disrespectful. That's probably true. But I also think, like, as a fan of someone, you want to hear, you want to know more about them, and you want to see the stuff that you didn't get to see when they were alive. So, like, when you look at, like, an author that died in, like, the 1800s or something, their unreleased projects will be released because, you know, you want to see this side of the artist that you didn't get to see in their, like, published work. So I think for a fan, it is just really an important thing to be able to hear a side of the artist that wasn't like officially put on a record.
That's true. But also I feel like another reason stuff could be released, it's because it's probably going to make like a lot of money. Like there's a certain aspect to the fact that like now there's just like a limited amount of content out there, and this is like special edition, that I think a lot of records released posthumously probably would do a lot better because they're like because the artist died, rather than like if they had released it while they were still alive, just because there's like a certain, I don't know, it's like special, even though it's like sad and dark, it's like weird that artist is gone now, and like this might be all you have from them, and like there's a finite amount left of like their art, so it like has a more value in a way, like to the public.
Yeah, and kind of like if you have somebody who's passed away who you love, and then you find like a piece of like clothing of theirs or just like something that they had that you never knew about, it's just this amazing, like exciting thing, right? And I think that's how people feel when they have like, they thought that it was all over, they've like mourned the end of their favorite artist, and then something new comes out and they just get that great feeling all over again.
Yeah, and again, it's unfortunate to think that person that passed away didn't really want us to see that or hear it, or at least in some cases that might be true. There definitely are tracks out there that maybe the person, the artist, wouldn't mind being released, you know, for the along the logic that we've been discussing, and like, oh, I love my fans, they love me, and I'd like them to hear this after I pass away. But yeah, on the other side of it, like, if they didn't release it, there's a good chance they don't want it to ever be heard, and we won't know that 100% ever.
Yeah, and you look at things like, it's a weird comparison, but just bear with me. Journals after wartime or the Holocaust or something like that, in a lot of cases, we don't know if those people wanted to have their stories be heard, but their stories being heard adds a lot of context to a certain era. So it's an interesting question that I think we should reflect on ourselves, whether these songs that are being released are positively influencing culture to an extent that it might be more beneficial, regardless of how this person wanted their work to be processed posthumously.
I also feel like unreleased work gives us a new perspective on that artist as a person, or what they were going through, struggles they were facing, things that they weren't putting out towards the public. And again, I don't know if that should ever be released or not. I think that this only complicates the issue, doesn't like solve anything. but definitely something to think about. Like, unreleased work could really break down a facade that an artist had towards the public.
And overall, what's kind of stressful is that, like we talked about earlier, when it comes to public domain, is it's like some of that stuff might become public domain in between 80 and 90 to 100 years. And we want to hear that now. We don't want to wait 100 years, you know, for it to become public domain. Like, that's in a ridiculous amount of time. So it's a little bit like, it's not selfish of the fans to want this stuff. It's just a natural thing if you love an artist. But like, overall, we have to understand that for people that make music, their music is part of them. You know, it's such a part of that person that, like, we have to respect that not all the music is to share overall. But I mean, definitely recently with the Lil Peep thing and the X thing, I'm a little bit happy that this conversation's come up again, because it's very valuable that we talk about this, because we have some very talented people that we just want to hear more from overall, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So we're just going to play another song and a couple of ads, and we may be back if we have time. We'll see.
I steal a few breaths from the world for a minute, and then I'll be nothing forever. And all of my memories and all of the things I have seen will be gone with my eyes, with my body, with me. But me and my husband, we are doing better. It's all together.
Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
Oh, everybody. God, this is awful. Isn't there anything?
Anything? Anything?
Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Discorder magazine, or check us out online at citr.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance?
A lot of hardcore stuff is just, is fast, very aggressive and loud, you know, music, angry music.
I
I am your host, Mr. Steeston Mike. Welcome to the Flex Your Head Show on CITR 101.9 FM here in Vancouver. I'm here every Tuesday.
6 to 8 p.m.
Playing some punk and hardcore for you. If you want to hear something, feel free to give me a call at 604-822-2487 or swing by flexyourhead.net and send us an email with a request.
The rainbow jacket, ball slang glow, Bronx is only Django. Snap be a golfer, stopper, that's where my pops go. That's where my pops went. See my percentage is a pennant to the planet. Knock it out the ballpark, crank it. I should not tie this tie to a metal log. Let the wings spread. It'll always come back, baby. Come back, shellac, black, baby. A comeback flat, black paint on the Chevy.
I've named this one JPEG.
No debit, I want credit. These dudes actors, straight jackets. Never learn to be a rapper. Kill masters, ice white like Casper.
Following is a JPEG
presentation.
All these pussy niggas pass. You, yeah.
You think you know me?
Got so. Does this ski mask make me a little fat?
I ain't never felt no shit.
And I'm fresh out the bag.
was saying long as it can sell. 25 packs on the reel, I feel like another spoke on the wheel. Two kills, one shot, crack rock, hit your face like Botox. I won't stop you, 4chan, bitch, I got the faux cock.
Okay, thank you for listening to Word on the Street. Next up, we have Radio Pizza Party. Have a good weekend.
Rappers coming at me smoking on that PCP. Fuck around and end up on Smack DVD. I wonder if my mama ever see me cheese. Nigga, I've been wild ever since I passed my CDCs. 25 cities in a row.
Baby girl, I feel to die on top your love. Your love. You are number one, there's no one above. You are the best in all the place, come show the world. Be your the boss, no be luck. Say I jam you for you, yeah, girl, give me love. Give me love, yeah. I say, oh, I. All the things where I tell you true to God, baby girl, no be lie. For this your body, I feel do anything if lie. Lips like Beverly, body like six, baby, no be lie. This number no be lie. Your body, naughty bam bam. So sweet, I'm in love. Inke G was the dilly. Inke G was the dilly. All these other girls are shitty shitty. Why they bum me? You are the reason they sing for you, eh? For you, eh? Bye for you, eh? She no like games, but she won't play. Chop you, I go leave them to play, eh? I say, oh, I. All the things where I tell you true to God, baby girl, no be lie. But for this, your body, I feel do. Beverly, body like six, body no be lie.